The House will come to order. Today is Thursday, February 28th. This is the 14th day of the 2008 budget session of the 59th Wyoming Legislature. The Assistant Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden.
Here.
Anderson. Bagby.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Dirks.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Edwards.
Here.
Esquibel F.
Here.
Esquibel K.
Here.
Gilmore.
Here.
Gingrey.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Hales. Hallinan. Hallinan. Hammonds.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Harvey.
Here.
Eichel.
Here.
Illaway.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Jorgensen.
Here.
Landon. Lockhart.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
McComey. Mercer.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Millen.
Here.
Olson. Peterson.
Here.
Philp.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Samuelson.
Here.
Semlek. Shepperson.
Here.
Simpson.
Here.
Slater.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Warren.
Here.
White.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Hallin. Davison.
Here.
Hales.
Here.
Hallinan.
Here.
Jorgensen.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Olson. Simlick.
Our prayer for the day will be offered by the Pastor Ernest Fitzhugh, representing Unity Missionary Baptist Church, Cheyenne. Reverend Fitzhugh.
Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. You fast learners, thank you. It's an honor once again to be here in your presence. Let us bow our heads. Father God, in the precious name of your Son, Jesus, we thank you for including these thy people among those that has been especially chosen to carry on this work. We thank you for calling them by your gospel message, making us all your brothers and sisters through Christ Jesus. Often we become lost and discouraged, but we know that you are there with us. We ask that you show these thy people all the many joyful opportunities you have to extend and strengthen their kingdom here and elsewhere. Bless these called workers that they may do those things that brings glory and honor to your name. Dear Father in heaven, in your glorious home, the holy angels do every your bidding, and we thank that they do it prayerfully. Bless all of these that labor in this Senate and in this House of Representatives in doing those things that brings glory and honor to your name. Not only that, but those laws and bills that they must enact that helps us. And we thank you for them. We ask that you give them patience, give them understanding, give them unity among themselves. Keep them all in your keeping care. Bless their families and all of their surroundings. And help them to overcome any hindrance that the devil may place in their midst. Keep them from the temptation to do the things their way. But let them do the things that according to the laws. And we thank you, Lord, and we give you praise, honor, and glory for it. We ask that you deliver them even right now. Bless their families. Keep them all in your keeping care. These things I do pray in the almighty, in the precious name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please join me in our Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Thanks for that, Pastor.
All right, I just enjoy it.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
If we
I don't want
everything. The reading clerk will read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 27, 2008 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Teeters, Representative Millen.
Members of the House, today is a special day. We are honored to be joined by the Ambassador to the United States from the European Union, John Bruton. Ambassador Bruton served as Prime Minister of Ireland from 1994 to 1997 and helped transform the Irish economies into the Celtic Tiger, one of the fastest growing economies in the world. He is a former legislator and was first elected to the Irish Parliament in 1969 at the age of 22 and became the leader of his party in 1990. He has a long history of distinguished public service, including positions as Ireland's Minister for Finance, Minister for Industry and Energy, and the Minister for Trade, Commerce, and Tourism. Since becoming the Ambassador to the United States, he has met with federal and state leaders to explain the importance of the European Union's relationship with the United States in matters of trade, counterterrorism, public health, energy, the environment, and the promotion of peace, democracy, and human rights around the world. It is a distinct pleasure of mine to welcome to the House the European Union Ambassador to the United States, His Excellency John Bruton.
Mr. Speaker and members, as someone who has served for 35 years myself, as a member of an elected body, I'm delighted to be back amongst people whom I consider to be part of the community of elected representatives. A very underappreciated group of people in the world, I fear. I want to say, first of all, that I'm delighted to be here in Cheyenne, in this dynamic city. I hope to visit Laramie later in the day and to learn more about this great state. I'm here to represent the European Union to you. As you know, the European Union started as just 6 countries, expanded to 10, expanded to 15, and now to 27 countries, 500 million people with our own currency, with free movement for people to live and work anywhere within the 27 countries if their country is a member of that union. A union of very wealthy countries and relatively poor countries still enjoying that freedom. The European Union is a guarantor of democracy in Europe because a country cannot enjoy the economic benefits of being in the European Union unless it's a democracy, unless its courts function independently of pressure and guarantee that there will be no corruption in governance. So we are a system not just of building peace in Europe, of reconciling France and Germany, of reconciling Hungary with its neighbours, of reconciling many other conflicts, but we're also a guarantor of democracy. The European Union is exceptionally important to this state. The European Union is the source of the largest amount of foreign investment from any other unit coming into the state of Wyoming. No other place invests as much in Wyoming as the European Union does. 60%, in fact, of all foreign investment coming into the state. We are the second most important destination for exports from the state of Wyoming, second only to Canada. The number of jobs that are supported in this way are enormous. We calculate that inward investment from Europe supports 6,000 jobs here in this state, and that exports from Wyoming to Europe support somewhere in the region of 1,500 jobs in this state. We want to work together with you to ensure that the tremendous resources of this state, the coal, the oil and the gas that are the wealth of this state, can be used to the full, but used to the full in a way that is consistent with preserving a safe environment, a planet that can be livable for our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren and their great-grandchildren in turn. And that requires that we work together to invest in new ideas, new technologies in areas such as capture and storage of carbon, which we're working on in Europe, which you're working on here in Wyoming. And if we could put our intellectual property and our intellectual brain power together, we can, I believe, achieve even more than either of us could achieve on our own. I know that this subject is one that's engaging your attention and has engaged the attention of the House and is now engaging the attention of the Senate at this very moment. And I hope that you will take it from me that we in the European Union want to work more closely with you in the future on this, to share our ideas with you and hopefully to receive the benefit of some of yours. Thank you very much for this privilege, Mr. Speaker, of allowing me to address the House. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor, please.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Fellow legislators, I wanted to remind you tonight about the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC's reception. It's at 5:30 in the Hitching Post. Everybody is invited for hors d'oeuvres and beverages. Would love to see you there. 5:30 at the Hitching Post. Thank you.
Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Well, folks, I don't know whether you've heard, but we have good news concerning a little four-legged critter on the woof, woof. Anyway, this morning, February the 27th, even a day earlier than they said they were going to do, in the Federal Register that they're delisted. Admittedly, lawsuits will continue, but the Fish and Wildlife Service have fulfilled their requirements that we insisted upon in our last legislative action. So we're headed in the right direction.
Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Members of the House, up in the gallery, you see some students that had to get on a bus at 5:30 this morning. Oh, yeah. And they've been sending me some emails. They're interested in the Castle Doctrine. They're interested in the animal cruelty bill. They're Mr. Munger's class from Newcastle Middle School. Welcome to the House of Representatives.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 182. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 9, State Retirement Board Immunity. The Senate failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated ayes 0, noes 30. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my honor and privilege, friends and colleagues, to introduce today we have the nurse of the day, Rennie Clark from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center, and also the doc for a day who unfortunately had her pager go off just moments ago, so she's off working. Today the doc for the day is my wife, Diane, and I was hoping to kind of make this a little special moment for her, but by all means, when you guys go back to talk to her today and thank her for coming, wish her a happy birthday. Today she is 40 years old, and she said it was okay for me to say that. So this is a big day for her, and she's just really tickled to come down and visit with all of you today. Thank you.
Speaker.
Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, a milestone like that, we need to get her back and have a little song. So if the good representative, when he gets her back this direction, we'll take care of that.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 53, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 63, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 87, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 22, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, White, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yagi, McComey, Teeters, Wallace. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 38, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yagi, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 27, engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Brechtel, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 56, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Brechtel, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman.
Chairman Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request re-referral of Senate File 56, the Omnibus Water Bill Construction, from Committee 5 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, Senate File 56 will be re-referred from Committee Number 5 to Committee Number 2. Are there other re-referrals? Representative Stewart, encore.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for my second time. In response to Chairman Childers' request, I would please ask the body to rise and join me in singing happy birthday to the doc for the day, Dr. Diane Noten.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Anne. Happy birthday to you.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Good morning. I would ask that Senate File 11 be moved down to the end of the second reading list.
Without objection, Senate File 11 will be the last bill taken up on second reading today. Members of the House, we are at that order of business of requests to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. Representative Illaway. The first message for our consideration is message number 174 on House Bill 16. Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message number 174 to House Bill 16. I have taken a look at what this does, talked to legal counsel. It appears to be fine, so I would ask your aye vote on this concurrence.
You are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 16. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Berger, Blake, Brechtel. Brechtel?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Buchanan?
Aye.
Childers?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Davison?
Aye.
Dirks?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Edmonds?
Aye.
Edwards?
Aye.
Esquivel F?
Aye.
Esquivel K?
Aye.
Gilmore?
Aye.
Gingery?
Aye.
Goggles?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye.
Hallinan?
Aye.
Hammonds?
Aye.
Harshman?
Aye.
Harvey?
Aye.
Eichel?
Aye.
Illaway?
Aye.
Yagi? Jones,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Olson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Samuelson,
aye.
Simlek,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Simpson,
aye.
Slater,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
Throne, aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Warren,
aye.
White,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 ayes.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 16. The next message for our consideration is in message number 175 on House Bill 21. Chairman Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message number 175 for House Bill 21, commercial vehicle fees, and this basically changes glad to happy. It inserts oversize for overweight, and I concur with this change, and I urge your favorable consideration.
We are now voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 21. A majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden, Anderson, Bagby, Berger, Blake, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Childers, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Dockstetter, Edmonds, Edwards, Esquibel F, Esquibel K, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Eichel, Illaway, Yagi, Jones, Jones conflict, Jorgensen, Landon, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, Martin, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Olson, Peterson, Philp, Korberg, Samuelson, Simlick, Shepperson, Simpson, Slater, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, conflict. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 2 noes, 2 conflicts.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 21. We are now at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 7.
Senate File 7, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to the Animal Damage Management Program.
There is an amendment. Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment number 1, second reading, to Senate File 7. Members of the floor, what I would like to do, I would like to ask for your consideration of this amendment, which basically, in place of repealing, it extends the sunset date to January 1st, 2011. I'm bringing this forward for really three primary reasons. The first one, the Animal Damage Management Board, which is doing wonderful work. I really do believe this. This is not about the work they are doing. It was authorized or founded by state statute in 1999. And then as late as 2006, our legislature actually authorized $6 million additional in funding to distribute for this project. The good work has been documented. The question that I'm bringing this forward to consider a sunset delay versus having it be completely repealed is because this is a program that is still being looked at. When we looked at all of our funding requests, we had funding from Game and Fish, we've had funding from the Wildlife Trust Fund, we've had funding across the board in a lot of different areas for the whole impact on the environment, for predator management, for habitat oversight, for all kinds of important issues to our state. And we even received a report from our university about the preliminary estimates of the economic benefits and cost of the predatory management management program, and that was December 2007. So what I'm saying is the program is still relatively new, and I think it would be a wiser decision for us to have a couple of more years to not have this program sunset or have the sunset be repealed and have a couple more years before it does sunset so we can look at the whole picture. And so I'd ask for your consideration to support this amendment and answer questions.
Chairman Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd urge the body to vote no on this amendment and aye on the bill. I guess I would have to ask the bringer of this amendment what she would be looking for in the next 2 years. We started this out as a pilot program in 99, and I wasn't very warm to it at the time. I wasn't sure if we'd see the success. And obviously we've had some wonderful successes. Lots of other states, people have come to realize now that coyotes and wolves and that like, they do eat meat. They aren't, they don't eat cereal and bread. They eat meat, and that meat comes in the form of livestock and wildlife of various forms. And it's been a hard concept to get across, but there has been a continuous change. And we're going to have our friends, the good chairman of the travel told us about. The wolves are here, and they're here to stay, and they're going to be for a long time. There's going to be parts of the state. The Fish and Wildlife Service is basically washing their hands of wolf management in the state of Wyoming. Predator management, this Animal Damage Board, is going to be on the front lines of that. In 2 years, we won't accomplish anything. We are going to have wolves, and we're going to have coyotes. We're going to have ravens eating sage-grouse egg nests or eggs in the western part of the state. We're going to have skunks with rabies. Those problems are not going to go away in 2 years. We know we're going to have it. This program, that's why we came a couple years ago. We said, all right, we kind of have seen this pass the test. I became a believer in it reading these reports, and hopefully all of you saw those. But a sunset wouldn't accomplish anything. We are going to have a serious predator problem in 2 years. We're going to have a serious predator problem in 10 years and 20 years and 50 years. And hopefully we have wolves and wildlife to worry about in 100 years. And, Mr. Speaker, I just would urge you to defeat this amendment and support the bill.
Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on and against the amendment, you know, for all the reasons that the good chairman from Agriculture said, that's one of the big reasons why to go ahead and remove the sunset. But I would remind this committee that this board was, or this whole issue was established in 1999. We also established something about the same time or after called the Business Council. And we remove the sunset on that, and far more dollars flow through that than they do through this. And I would thoroughly agree with the chairman of the Agriculture Committee that the four-legged critter, the wolf that I just mentioned this morning, is going to be a huge part of this. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, and precisely for the reasons that the good speaker before me was talking about, is we did hold the Business Council to review by the legislature for a number of years. I think that's a real positive thing, to maintain that level of accountability. We are going into some real uncertainty in the future here, and I think that we need to be able to focus on this program and use this in a positive way that'll really benefit the people and wildlife of the state.
Further discussion prior to Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment. I think it's important that we continue to review these various programs. We've passed increased funding for game and fish, for sensitive species management. We have a variety of programs that address these issues. There's an item in the budget for millions of dollars for predator control. I guess I'm a little confused about what this board does and whether it represents duplication. And for that reason, I think it's relevant to and appropriate to keep some sort of sunset on this agency so that we can avoid growing government that we don't need. Thank you.
Representative Philp.
Mr. Speaker, speaking on and against the amendment, and if we repeal the sunset date of this organization, of the predator program, we will still be able to look at that program. The governor will still look at the program when they present their budget to the governor through the Department of Agriculture. Appropriations Committee will still look at that budget just as we do now. I think they've demonstrated that they've done some good work. It's documented that they have done work that benefits wildlife, benefits livestock, and is good for the state of Wyoming. So I ask you to defeat this amendment.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I'd want to say again that the idea of delaying the repeal and waiting a couple more years is not about the credibility and the need of the program. It's definitely there. It was more a perception that I had of looking at all the different budget requests addressing these issues, and that we, by having the sunset still there, having us look at it in a couple more years, for a couple more years, just increases that accountability a little bit. It puts the program in a little bit more of our eye of seeing and observing. With so many different programs and so many different needs going on in the state, by repealing the sunset, even though we'll look at the budget, many of the items in the budget, we'll look at the numbers, but it just kind of goes through quickly without really looking at the program. This gives the entire floor a chance and gives this organization the responsibility to be accountable a couple more years. Part of the reason, too, is just looking at the funding increase. We increased the program by $6 million in 2006. That was a substantial increase. Again, we did that in this last budget request period. And so I think we as a group need to be a little bit more accountable in looking at these organizations, and they need to be accountable in looking at what they're doing back to us before we just repeal a sunset. So I would ask for your consideration for supporting this amendment.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7 has failed. Division being called. All of those in favor of second reading amendment number 1, please stand. All of those opposed to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7, please stand. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 7 has failed. Senate File 7 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 8.
Senate File 8, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to the Farm Loan Program.
There are some amendments. Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 8. Members of the House, what this does on page 4, line 14, it moves that percent from 70 to 75. The Farm Loan Program was never designed to compete with our financial institutions. It was supposed to be perhaps a safety net for those in agriculture when times are tough. And we do seek that balance. We do seek that balance with the private sector, and that's exactly what this amendment is trying to do. I urge passage.
Representative Mattin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is one primary weakness with this amendment, and that is that it's based on a SLIB decision as to the interest rate, as opposed to basing it on the true opportunity cost of making the loan in the first place. Mr. Speaker, if I was hard up, which I am, and I wanted you to lend me some money, and you had a portfolio that was yielding 10.4%, in order to persuade you to lend me that money, I would have to offer you 10.4%, and it would be unreasonable for me to expect you to give me a bargain rate on it. The other aspect about this amendment is that it unfairly competes with the private lenders. I have passed around a letter, actually, from a banker that describes this. I can see doing this if we had a credit crunch, if there was a shortage of private sector borrowers, and even if it was a competitive rate, there's not a real reason for it. It also has, even if we accept the amendment or the accept it unamended, it would really result in a very substantial opportunity loss for the state of Wyoming. As a matter of fact, there's, the rate of return that we're receiving now on Treasury investments is like 10.2 to 10.3%. The amendment actually gets us on today's SLIB decision of the interest rate, it would be equal to 6%. This means that there's about 400 basis points, or between 400 and 500 basis points, that we're just throwing out as a actually a subsidy to the borrowers of this. Now, if you take that on a per $1 million basis, that turns out to be $50,000 we lose out on for every $1 million we lend out. And if we lend out $20 million, it translates into a $1 million opportunity loss that the citizens of Wyoming have to eat. And for that reason, I would hope that you would resist this amendment.
Chairman Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I stand in support of this amendment. This amendment was brought to us by a spokesman for some of the bankers in this state, one of the lobbyists. And this, when he came to committee, they asked us to do this as an amendment in the committee to make it more fair and more equal. And I don't see it as competition at all between the private institutions. And the state has always had a great program that's been a safety net. It is not easy to go in there and get a loan. It is a lot easier to go to your local bank and get one. But I guess I don't see this. I was thinking there's probably a 40 basis point difference, not a 400 basis point difference from this thing that was sent around. I had two quotes on ag loans for the exact same rate that they were saying the state was. So it's not uncompetitive at all. We have treated our financial institutions wonderfully in this state. We have a, I don't know if you want to call it a fencing bill, but we've been running that through that was supported by the banks. And we treat these financial institutions extremely well. But this is so important to people in this state when there is a need for a safety net. I tell you, if you have a choice to go to the state land board and get a loan or to go to a private institution, it is much, much, much easier to go to a private institution. But there's a lot of people that can't. And I would urge you to support this amendment. It's a good compromise. It was what was requested by the lobbyists for the financial institutions. So we are bringing this amendment on his behalf, and I urge you to support it.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. The motion is to adopt a second reading amendment, number 1, to Senate File 8. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment, number 1, to Senate File 8 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment, number 2, to Senate File 8. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate file number 8. This amendment basically reverts back to the statute's original language before the existence of Senate file 8, and it's found on page 4, lines 7 to 14. This is the way the law read prior to the introduction of Senate file number 8, and all it's saying is that the interest rate is market determined. It's going to be determined by whatever the return is in the state of Wyoming's investment portfolio. The only minor change I made is to make it a 3-year moving average rate of return so that there, you don't have the wild fluctuations. And what it does is it recognizes that there's an opportunity cost of diverting funds from our investment portfolio, and it asks that alternative borrowers pay a return comparable to what we would have received on the money. Without this amendment, it means that instead of a 10.2% return, we would only be receiving a 6% return based on the amendment that was just passed. I ask you to, again, refer to the handout regarding this matter. You know, we're not in the middle of a depression. The other thing that's very important to remember is that this farm loan program is not needs-based. You know, the wealthiest landowner is welcome to apply for a loan like this, as well as the least wealthy landowner. In that sense, you know, if we start lending money out, and you can bet that there's going to be a lot of money lent out, you know, each 22 million or so is going to result in a transfer payment to these borrowers equal to about $1 million. And I just bring this amendment, for the body to consider in view of the fact that we have some kind of fiduciary responsibility to be prudent with our investment funds. So I respectfully ask for your consideration on this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Samuelson.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to urge you to vote against this amendment. This is one of those amendments that shows up on your desk as we're debating first reading, and I guess we don't, actually, we don't appreciate that at all. It's a last-second amendment that I haven't even had a chance to track through the bill. It was referred to a lot of that handout, and that would be a fun debate to have at a different day on a different time on whether or not the state should be in this business. But I'm going to ask you all to resist this amendment. I can't even speak to it. I haven't even tracked it through the bill.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I see that the good representative from House District 40 passed out a letter that some of us had received from up in the northern part of the country yesterday. It indicates that the bankers aren't all of one mind in this, that this particular financial institution, they're concerned about this. They're concerned about subsidizing this with state taxpayers' money, and quite frankly, that alarmed us when we saw this. And I think it boils down to the basic question of the role of government. Are we going to advocate now taking over things that the private sector does? And I think that's one of the things that we've resisted. And we've seen cases where that's happened before and destroyed entire industries eventually, if not weakening them. So I think that this is something that we should increase the amount available for loans, and that's what this amendment does, but not go in and knock that rate down to where it's actually subsidizing it with monies that really need to be put to many other state services that we provide. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, on and against the amendment. I'd just like to review Senate File 8. There's three portions of this bill that we're considering relative to this amendment. And the biggest program out there is the old traditional State Farm loan program. That interest rates on those are 8, 9, and 10%, depending on how much the percent of the equity that you have secured. That big program out there had $268 million in it, and 90% of that money is still unencumbered. So there's opportunities that people have looked at this and said, this is not the program for me. We're going to go to our private bankers, and this is where we're going to, and that's the right thing to do. Again, you know, this is just a safety net. And also remind, this is the body, this is not a grant program. It's a loan program that needs to be paid back. Refocus the discussion. We're talking about the interest rates here, not the investment opportunities of the corpus. The interest rate that's proposed here with the second reading amendment that we just approved is now going to be 6% for this for these loans. And 6%, in my estimation and talking to other people in the body, that is at the market value now. In fact, it might even be a few fractions of a point over the market value. So we are competitive with the private sector. We are just a little bit above the private sector loan rate. And I just urge you to not to support this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know what the perfect rate of interest for farmland or cattle is. I don't think anybody in this room does either. That rate is set by the market. And if we have, if we're getting 10.2% on our money elsewhere, to accept 5.6 or 6% is a subsidy. And I think it also has a problem in that it encourages speculation on farm and ranch property and capital equipment. So I would urge this body to support this amendment, or if not this amendment, then another that's going to make it a little bit more reasonable than 5.6 or 6.6%. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to point out, and I appreciate the statistics presented by the good representative from the northeast part of the state, but I think that I thought that just made the argument and made the point. It's really something we should celebrate that this isn't being used very much. It shows us how well the private sector is working. And because it is working so well, I don't think it's in the interest of the state to come in and start competing with the private sector. And that's what lowering this interest rate advocates, and I think that that could really damage a system that's worked well for years, and we should keep healthy instead of competing against our own private sector. So on and for the amendment.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Madden.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll be very brief. It was referred to a little bit ago that it's a loan program. It's not a grant program. I would submit to you that the way it's structured with the latest amendment that was passed is that it's both a grant and a loan program. The loan program requires a payment of 6% interest if it prevails. And then there's going to be a 4.2% rate of interest that will be reverted back to the borrowers in the form of a grant, because we've demonstrated in our portfolio that we can generate 10.2 to 10.3% in our portfolio. Again, I want to remind you that this is not a needs-based program. There's no application where you have to submit what your net worth is or what your income is. Anyone's welcome, as long as they own land, to apply for a loan like this. And I'll just, leave it up to the body if you want to, make transfer payments to these borrowers, then you should vote against this amendment. If you want to, use an economic based reasoning process, you should vote to support this amendment. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 8. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 8 has failed. Senate File 8 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to business entities.
Senate File 18 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 21.
Senate File 21, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program.
There is an amendment. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move
introduction or second reading amendment for Senate File 21, number one. This amendment very self-explanatory in the first paragraph. It inserts providing for a scholarship enhancement upon demonstration of meritorious academic performance for the Hathaway Scholarship. What this is once a student has achieved a Hathaway Scholarship coming out of high school as it's currently structured, that die is cast. They can never, that if they come in at a lower level, they can never increase that amount. And what this does is provide an incentive to college students once they've gotten to school to have an incentive to move up. So basically what it does is it says that following the first spring semester, which is when the university and the colleges evaluate all of the Hathaway students, it's their regular schedule. It's not going to create a bunch of extra administrative problems for the university and the college. Following the first spring semester, after which the student has completed not less than 24 credit hours and has attained at least a 2.5 grade point average, then they will automatically be awarded the higher Hathaway scholarship. And then once they've been awarded that scholarship, all the same rules apply, just as if they would have achieved that scholarship coming out of high school. So they have to maintain the same grade point averages and hours taken and all of those things that they have to do in order to keep that scholarship. And the other thing that this amendment does is make it clear that this does not apply to the needs-based part of the Hathaway scholarship, so that this only applies to the meritorious part of the Hathaway scholarship. And, you know, one concern would be, do we have the financial capability? Because, of course, the Hathaway scholarship was set up using some assumptions about how many students would get each of these scholarships and how much money that was going to take. So I would point out to you that we're not talking about any new students. These are students who already have a Hathaway at some level, at least $800 a semester. And so we're talking about a finite group of students who've got the gumption and the initiative to do well in college, and by so doing, they can receive a higher scholarship. So that's a finite chunk of money that we're talking about. And the other thing that I would point out is that there were far more students who've dropped out of the system than we expected in our original calculations. And so, bottom line, the money's there to take care of this incentive. And I'll stand for questions.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I read this amendment more closely, I was kind of told what was in it, but as I read it more closely, I guess it, members, if you look at the amendment on, I think the key part here, and I would just make a comment, I guess, on this, but on line 21, the spring semester is completed not less than 24 credit hours. Well, that's just a year of minimal kind of hour, 12 hours a semester. At a 2.5. Now, 2.5 is just the maintenance for the honor scholarship. So I think the question, and you know, this incentive question is, I think, a very appropriate question to move folks up. But I would submit, I don't think that this is enough of an incentive. I mean, if you're going to take just 1 year of school and have a 2.5, is that equivalent to busting your hump 4 years in high school, taking hard classes, you know, earning a high ACT score? Is that equivalent to that? Because what can happen now, you can come in as an opportunity scholar, $1,600 a year, past 24 credit hours, and now be an honor scholar with a 2.5 GPA. So you can go from the $1,600 a year to the $3,200 a year, irregardless kind of the rigor in high school. And so that's kind of where the mustard was cut. Now, if this deal was an incentive where maybe after 2 or 3 years, 50, 60,
hours of college, so you're partly, you're halfway through your degree program, and you have like a 3.3. I mean, people who've really shown that incentive and are going to graduate cum laude or really taken off in college, I mean, I think I could support something like this. But I think, frankly, it's not meritorious enough. I think 2.5 is not that difficult for a first-year student. And, you know, there's so much of it depends on your major, too. Let's face it. I mean, you enroll in a college of engineering, your life is pretty well mapped out for 4 or 5 years, and it's going to be very difficult. There's other majors you could, you know, you could probably get a 2.5 a little easier. And I don't, that's a whole other debate, and we've had a lot of discussions. So, and I would say this last thing, and I think this is an appropriate discussion, an appropriate issue. I just don't think this is meritorious enough. I think also the bigger question that we have to answer as elected officials, and that's the problem with these scholarships nationwide, they just can't stay meritorious. They somehow become entitlements. And that's my concern, and that's my fear, is that once we kind of keep piddling and letting more and more and more, at what point do we just say, heck, let's just give the university more money and every Wyoming kid gets their tuition paid, you know? And so so that's kind of those issues, to summarize that. But again, I guess I oppose this because I don't think it's tough enough. If we want to move those kids up, double their scholarship, I don't think 1 year of school at 2.5 meets a, you know, a 3.5 in high school. And what is it, the 28 or 30 on the ACT? I just don't think those two things correspond. So on and against, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising on in favor of the amendment, I would encourage the good representative from Casper to bring a third reading amendment to increase the rigor if that's the only hang-up he has about this concept. I think essentially what we're trying to do is we're trying to incentivize people to achieve in college, and I think that's a good thing, and I don't think it's going to be a burden on the state to do that. I don't think the overall costs are going to outweigh the benefits here. We can always come back and modify this. We're going to take a look at the Hathaway every year, and we can see what we get for our the bang for the buck that we interject into this. And I think we ought to give this a shot for a year. Let's see what it does. And if we want to discuss the rigor, let's not throw the whole amendment out the window, because I think the concept is valid. Thank you.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the last speaker in that the premise behind this is good, and I do want at some point the body, and I would hope it might even be an interim topic. You know, a lot of our students have started in this program. They've got 2 years under their belt at the end of this semester, and they've demonstrated they can do well in college. And so now when they will be transferring from our community colleges to our university, it's important to think that it's going to cost them twice as much in their tuition. But I agree with the good representative from the middle part of the state that, as put forward, this particular one has some problems. For me, in addition to the rigor not being enough, I think you almost have to think like one of those students to understand that you're setting up an incentive that is the opposite of what you want to do. What this amendment does is say, don't study in high school. Get one of these easier scholarships, and then your first year of college, take all of the easy classes. If you take dancing, PE, all of those, don't take any of your general requirements, then you can double the amount of money that you're going to get. That is what this amendment tells those students. Do not take the general requirement classes. Just take the things that get you the grade point average and get you the hours, and then you'll be able to get more money. And I know that that is not the intention of the bringer of this amendment, but that is the way that it reads, and that is the way that kids would use it. Remember, ultimately, the goal of the Hathaway is not to get kids to college or into our technical programs. The goal is to get them to graduate. And that means that when they arrive, they take the courses that get them towards that end goal. And for that reason, I'm opposed to this amendment. I think it creates a disincentive to be successful in graduating from college or technical programs.
Representative Ken Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendment, and I think there is some middle ground we can look at here. You know, first off, consider that the freshman year in college is going to be the toughest year, even if some of those kids were doing really good in high school, and then they get to college, they're dealing with a lot more issues than just their grade point average. And secondly, if you look at some of those kids that have went on and done better in college, and they're getting up around a 3.3, there's probably a lot more advantages for them to get the different types of scholarships and that are available for those kids. And what we got to find is that middle ground, where those kids are at that are getting those types of scholarships compared to the types of kids that we want to keep in college on the Hathaway program. Thank you.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was for this amendment to start with, and then as I heard more, I think it really should go back to the Education Committee. The rigor, I think, is a real serious question. I took a geology class up at the college up in my area a couple years ago, and I was unimpressed by the rigor. In fact, I talked to the professor after that and told him, you know, if this was at UW, I thought it'd be a much tougher course than what he offered here. And he said, you know, that was one of his considerations, that he had a hard time making it too tough because of some of the students were dropping out and so on. So I think there needs to be some higher standards than just a GPA, and I think the Education Committee really needs to wrestle with some issues before we go ahead with this. So against the amendment.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment and for additional discussion, of course. There are some of us who really didn't do that well in high school. Really didn't like high school very well, did not succeed, and we've got a whole lot of those kids right now. Our dropout rate's running somewhere around 30%. But I got into college, and it was something that worked for me. It was something that made sense to me. It was something that I could actually thrive in. And so as we look at our dropout rates, as we look at some of the kids who really just don't make it in our high school systems right now, but then they get to college and things really start firing off, let's give them these opportunities. Let's make sure that we know that we're providing those options to those kids so that they can excel, they can exceed, and we're providing those incentives. Thank you very much.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, if you look back at what we were trying to do at the very beginning, which was to engage the families, engage the kids at a young age, to get themselves on a success career. And that's how we started it out. They'd take rigorous courses, they'd score well, and they'd test nationally. And then we've decided to kind of broaden it some and take a little of that discipline out of it. If we keep doing that, we will go from a incentive to do the right things early on, engaging the families, engaging the kids, and getting them through school for what we really want is successful young people getting an education, to something that we can treat as an entitlement. You can not do some of these things, but if you come in later and take a couple of reasonably easy courses in college, then you can get into the program rather than stick with the rigor. I think we were trying to make a ground shift change in how we approached scholarship education with the Hathaway, and every time we add some of these things to it, I think we dilute what was our original concept of this, which I still think is a very important item. So I urge your defeat of the amendment.
Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on and against the amendment, you know, even though I'm an old man, I did go through that engineering curriculum, and I think I probably would have made that scholarship if I lived in this state to get into the college. And even though I had a lot of fun my freshman and part of my sophomore year, I probably still could have made the increase that they're proposing in this amendment. But I didn't really deserve it. But I think the statements by some of the previous speakers that either an interim study or the good representative from the center part of the state worked with the representative from District 52 to amend this to increase the level, I think that would be highly proper, because over the first 24 to even 40 plus hours that you take, even in the rigorous curriculum that I went through,
I think it's such that you need it to be more challenging. So I would say on and against the amendment, and let's bring it to a higher level.
Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I find this amendment difficult. I'm for it, and then I'm against it. I'm for it. I hear the different arguments. It's not a real easy decision to make. A question, one of the arguments I'm hearing is this is enabling students to take really simple classes to get their GPA up to just kind of take it easy and then earn this higher-level scholarship, and then what? And I guess the question I would have is that may be the case for a few students, but there may be some students who reach a maturity level, a support level. They come out of a situation where maybe education hasn't been their number one goal in their family. They get over to university, they get some tutoring, they do well. And it's an incentive-based idea on the, for those students. And to assume that they're all just going to take an easy route to get a higher GPA, that certainly may be the case for some. But I guess I'm wondering, is that the case for all? And when the sponsor of this amendment perhaps can explain when the sponsor speaks again of perhaps are there any stories of students who would demonstrate that, in fact, the kids came to school, they worked harder, they did well, and they would be eligible for this scholarship as under this amendment would provide them, as opposed to just trying to get a higher GPA for an effort that wasn't real credible. Thank you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we have kind of two points of view here, and this goes back to the incentive as we struggled through this, getting the Hathaway going since I've been here anyway. One point of view is a tougher and more rigorous course. We're encouraging kids to take that. They get good grades. They get good ACTs. And we give them the best $3,200 scholarship. And that's kind of what we wanted to do. But we kind of left out the second group of kids, kind of the unmotivated ones that go through high school. But they had great potential. And I kind of know what I'm talking about because I was one of those. I really didn't care. These are our average, medium kids. They get, okay grades. They get a medium ACT. But again, think of the potential that's there. And I think this just kind of helps us help the kids that we're looking out for the top kids already. My goodness, the kids that are getting the honor scholarship already have other scholarships. They're making money with their other scholarships and the success curriculum. We have kids in our state making money because we're rewarding them way good for what they do. I kind of feel a little bit bad about that when they can make money using all the scholarships. Well, what about the other kids? What about those that have the kind of the medium kids that are in there, not really motivated? When I got to school, my grades got better. Or when I got to college, my grades got better. I would be one of these kids. So I speak for this amendment. I think there's a lot of thought. And if we want to help it, we talk about doing things in the interim. I don't know what you guys have found about the interim, but sometimes we don't quite get done in the interim what we want to do. And I'm a little discouraged there, but I think it's something we need to continue to do and work on. So I speak for this amendment and looking out for the kids that are just the average kids going through. I think we've kind of neglected them a little bit. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Fellow representatives, I definitely rise in opposition to the amendment. As you reflect back on the establishment of Hathaway Scholarship, it meant exactly that, scholarship-type situation. You look at this proposed amendment, it's talking on a 2.5 grade point average, which is pretty anemic, to say the least, over 24 hours. And if you reflect back on your college experience, 2.5 is not that strong, and I don't think it rises to the level of scholarship. It needs some more work on it. It's I think it's premature, has to have a second review, so I definitely would oppose this amendment.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The 2.5 grade point average was determined because that is what a honors scholarship student has to maintain in order to keep that scholarship. I personally don't have much heartburn over raising that grade point average. That's just the number that was brought to us by the colleges because it would be easy for them to administrate. Because they would be able, once these kids had reached that level, then they would be in the same boat as everybody else in that top category. So that's where that number came from. I would much prefer raising that grade point average rather than increasing the length of time that you, or the number of class hours. And here's why. You know, there's all kinds of families around this state and all kinds of situations for college kids. My family did not have a tradition of families paying for students' education. We were on our own. And regardless of whether you agree with that or not, I believe that's the case with many students throughout the state. And one thing that happens when you have to be self-sufficient like that as a college student is that when you start having to pay your own bills, the light bulb goes off. And so when you show up at college and realize that, by golly, if I knuckle down and work hard, I can have a better financial situation here for myself, that's what I'm trying to do with this. So, that being said, I think that there are, you know, several different points of view that have been presented here. I would like to give those students who have received a lower scholarship once they've gotten to college, once they've, if they're showing the gumption and the initiative to work hard and raise that GPA, I would like to give them the ability to move up once they get to college. And so I leave it to the body to decide.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 21. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 21 has failed. Division being called, all of those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 21, please stand. All of those opposed to second reading amendment number 1, please stand. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 21 has failed. Senate File 21 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 39.
Senate File 39, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to the State Minors Hospital Board.
Senate File 39, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 41.
Senate File 41, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to vacation of plats, vacating subdivisions.
There is an amendment. Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1. What this does at the end of the bill, and we talked about this a little yesterday on general file, there's really no direction to the commissioners as to what standard to use. So I added in there that no municipal or county approval under this section shall be arbitrarily or unreasonably withheld. A very low standard, but it was, I thought of putting in there whatever is in the best interest of the county, but then they would never approve one because you have to sort of understand where this is coming from. There was an incident in one of our counties where back in the year 2000, I'm pretty sure it's 2000, when we redid the subdivision laws, we said if you were inside a platted subdivision, you were not eligible for ag exemption. And this one subdivision figured this out, that's not good for them, that they wanted the ag exemption. So what they did was vacate their subdivision. And under the law before this bill passes, you didn't actually have to bring that to the commissioners. You just had to get all the owners to agree, take it to the clerk, and then the clerk just writes vacated over your plat. And it never went to the commissioners. And in this particular case, these commissioners of this county want to have some approval over it, because it takes those properties essentially off their tax rolls and puts them on to ag exemption, where they do pay some, but not the amount they had been paying. So I just wanted to make sure there was something in there that said that they can't unreasonably withhold it or withhold it arbitrarily, you know, based on the color of your hair or something like that. So I would urge your support.
Further discussion. Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I just have a question. I would like some definition, or is there something in our statute that kind of describes arbitrary and unreasonable?
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not aware of anything in the statute, but case law certainly defines arbitrary. Arbitrariness is the example I used there at the end, that I'm basing it on the color of your hair or lack of hair. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 41. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 41 has been adopted. Senate File 41 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 43.
Senate File 43, introduced by Senator Geis, an act relating to contagious and infectious diseases among livestock.
Senate File 43 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 48.
Senate File 48, introduced by the Management Council, an act relating to the administration of government regarding reporting requirements.
Senate File 48, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 57.
Senate File 57, introduced by Senator Anderson, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system regarding hospitals' participation in the state retirement.
Senate File 57, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 11.
Senate File 11, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to subdivisions, large acre parcels.
There are some amendments. Representative Childers.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 11 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, all I'm trying to do with this amendment is to place into the statutes that for these subdivisions that it's clearly stated not only on the plat, but on all offers, contracts, agreements for the sale and purchase of lots within the subdivisions, showing in capital letters the surface estate of the land to be subdivided is subject to full and effective development of the mineral estate. We've had problems after problems with subdivisions in the past, and all this does is make it quite clear. Now, what it does not ask the people to do in developing the subdivisions is that they have to go through a search to see whether the land has been severed. In other words, the minerals in the surface state have been severed. But what it does do is encourage purchasers of the land that this state is very clear that the dominant estate is the mineral estate, and that it's probably strongly encouraged that they do a title search, including on the mineral estate, simply to see whether it's severed or not. So I would encourage you to approve the amendment.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This appears to be a friendly amendment. I'd urge its adoption.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 11. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 11 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 11. Representative Gingrey.
On the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move second reading amendment number 2. And I discussed this yesterday about bringing this amendment when we talked about this during the Committee of the Whole. What this amendment does, number 1, it deletes all the amendments that we've done up to this point. It actually deletes almost the entire bill, except I left in 317, and 317 was the part about filing contract for deeds, which was fine to leave in. And what it does, and before I explain what it does, it's good to go back and sort of understand subdivision law real quick. And we discussed this a little bit yesterday. Justice Kite wrote a great opinion in Pedro Aspin, in which she makes the distinction between what we know as zoning and what we know as subdividing, which are two different things. Zoning, under the statute, is granted to counties with just one sentence, that the counties may zone to promote the public health, safety, morals, and general welfare of the unincorporated areas of the county. That's the entire grant of power for zoning. That's the legislature's full comment on the topic of zoning. We leave it up to the counties to determine how they zone, or even if they want to zone. They don't have to. So some counties have determined to zone, some have not. The distinction here is zoning is regulating the use of land. But what we're talking about in this bill is not the use of land. What we're talking about in this bill is the subdividing of land. Now, subdividing, all counties have to comply with. That one they don't get a choice with. But back in 2000, we made a lot of changes. It used to be a subdivision was defined as when any time you divided land 3 or more times. In 2000, we switched that, and we said any time you divide, any time you make a division of land, that's a subdivision. And then we gave exemptions. One of those exemptions being anything over 35 acres is exempted. We also did other exemptions. If you're dividing land up for a cemetery, that's exempted. Railroad right-of-ways are exempted. These family splits are exempted. And so there's quite a list of the exemptions. But the main exemption that we're talking about here today is this exemption of anything above 35 acres is exempted. Well, if you're not exempted, how's the law work? Well, what all the counties have to do is that, and this is where it gets sort of interesting, if you're splitting land and you're splitting anywhere from 1 to 5 lots, and of course all these have to be less than 35 acres, if you're splitting between 1 and 5 lots, it's up to the county commissioners. They get to choose what the rules are. Now, they have a list to pick from, and it's all in 185.306, which is our minimum requirements for subdivisions. And it's 3 pages of things that you have to do. But the commissioners can go through and say all of them apply, none of them apply, or some of them apply if you're between 1 and 5 lots. So you could do a 5-lot subdivision of 35 acres, and your county commissioners could actually determine that you don't have to comply with anything. Now, once you go over 5, you get to 6 lots, then they're required, they have to follow all the rules. And in many counties, they've done something that the legislature didn't actually put in the statute, but they're certainly allowed to do. You'll hear many counties talk about simple minors and majors. A simple one being a two-lot subdivision, and most counties have said a simple subdivision, which is 2-lot, have no rules. You don't have to do anything. And then a minor is a 3, 4, or 5, and then major, of course, being 6 or more. So there's this list of things that you have to provide. What this does, because all that had happened was Natrona County had been regulating large subdivisions and doing it well. Now, they were going under the provision of zoning, and the court said no, and that's where the court made the distinction between zoning and subdividing. And they said, Natrona, you can't do it this way. So what my amendment does is puts it back on the counties. We talk over and over about local control. Up to this point, we've always given local control to the counties. And all this would do is put it back into the county's purview. And here's what it says. It keeps the one in there that says, you know, anything over 35 acres is exempted. Except, and then you read subsection C, which I put on, it's page 2 of the amendment, line 6 through 9. What it says is each board of county commissioners may by resolution elect to apply this article. And when I say this article, it's all those subdivision rules. In its entirety to the sale or other disposition of land where the parcels involved are 35 acres or larger up to 140 acres. That accomplishes the same task as this other bill without all the Christmas tree ornaments. It just says, listen, county, if you want to regulate from 35 to 140, pass a resolution. And then on top of that, if it is a subdivision, so let's pretend they did that. They adopt the resolution. They said, we're going to regulate between 35 and 140. If someone comes in with a five-lot subdivision, they still may not have to comply with the rules because they can still go back to what's already still in the law. Between one and five lots is up to that county to decide which rules apply. And so they get to pick and choose. I just found this to be a much simpler fix. This was somewhat the fix that that the court was pointing toward in that case. And I'll just point out, I consider this an alternative. I don't consider it the better alternative. I in no way mean to imply that the Corporations Committee has worked on this for 2 years. I think they've put a lot of blood and sweat and maybe some tears into building this bill. So I just thought we should at least look at an alternative way to do this, of the legislature not dictating how to do it, but instead leave it up to the counties to decide how they would like to implement it and if they even wanted to implement it.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate this proposed amendment that's been brought by my fellow legislator. This, to me, this simplifies the whole thing. When I get an amendment that's a couple of pages in a somewhat legal bill, I can't figure out what's happening. And this makes it pretty simple. We heard yesterday in the debate on this that we probably as a legislature should not be telling folks who live in a, let me just say, rural county, for example, setting parameters for them or telling them how to subdivide. But I think what this does is it comports with the law. It comports with subdivision authority that's given to county commissioners. County commissioners are aware of and sensitive to the feelings of their constituents. And it just seems to me a very rare and pleasant simplification of the issue before us. So I would urge you to support this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess I'm going to ask for a ruling on the amendment. You know, quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, line 7 and 8, I could have the possibility of dividing the amendment, but with the amendment on line 20, he combined sections E and F, and I have no way to separate that unless the speaker can divide line 20 into separating section E and F. If he can't, then I'll speak accordingly.
The House will stand at ease for a ruling.
Members of the House, according to a ruling by our LSO staff attorneys, they've indicated that the divisions asked for by Representative Childers cannot be met, that the amendment either has to be taken up in its entirety or not at all. So, Representative Childers.
Well, Mr. Speaker, then for that reason, I rise on and against the amendment. You know, while the amendment that you folks just put on was a small amendment and not that difficult for the developers, I think it's a lot more important than most people think, simply because if you go back to the split estate issues that we discussed, there's a huge, huge amount of people in this state that have a real problem with the mineral estate and the surface estate. But on the other hand, this simply establishes for subdivisions, it makes it quite clear that people recognize that mineral estates are the dominant estate in any of the lands, and even if they are combined, a person should go into it with knowledge about it. So he needs to go through a process of determining whether that land is split or not. And by stepping in and deleting the amendment that we just put on, and then also not allowing me to divide on line 20, which is page 11, lines 1 through 18, it again makes it impossible for me to just speak to that particular section. So I would say that if he wants to bring another amendment, leave that out, maybe I won't talk again. But I would say on and against the amendment.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm rising against the amendment, much the same reason. On page 6, there's the in capital letters, no proposed water supply system. Those of us who are on Select Water have seen frequent horror stories on subdivisions that have been developed, sold to people, the subdivider has left, and they have no water. I've got a list of here of about 12 of them, and that's not all, near all of them. I could give you an example of a few. One in Weston County where people were hauling water. All of a sudden, the price of the water being hauled got too high. We're putting $2.1 million into that for less than, I think, less than 20 homes to get them pipe water in there, and their water bill is still going to be over $100 a month. That's the minimum water bill. That's one of the stories. There's many of them that come to us where the subdivider has left, have gone broke. Some of them are very legitimate. They're, you know, old enough that nobody could live, subdivider couldn't live that long. But some of them are people that have just not realized that they don't have a water supply there. I think it's vital that our people by those subdivisions know what the water supply is, that the subdivider ought to be responsible for that, not come to the state and get bailed out. So I would object to that amendment on this basis.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, rising in opposition to the amendment, I think it is a bit of a misnomer to say that the amendment does what the bill proposes to do in a simpler way, because what the amendment does do is it really destroys the bargain that makes this bill possible at all. And that bargain was based upon all those requirements that are required currently in the small land subdivision provisions. And there are a number of them in 18.5306, and it goes through and it says you have to do a number of things with respect to these small acreage subdivisions. In order to come in and do larger acreage subdivisions, the bargain was, okay, we're going to require you to do some things, but we're going to take some of these things off the table that make no sense when you're dealing with lots that are 35, 40, 140 acres. And a good example of that is on the sewage system provision. There's a requirement in the current bill that you go in and you have to explain what you're going to do for sewage system, and if there's not going to be a central sewage system, you merely put that on the documentation. Whereas if this amendment passed and the large subdivisions would be subject to those requirements currently in statute, you would have to come in and explain on the basis of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 separate subparts what you're going to do with regarding to sewage systems. And if you decide to have onlot sewage systems, you have to do another report that includes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more requirements that make absolutely no sense when you're talking about large acreage subdivisions. And there was a huge fear on the part, and I think a legitimate one, on the part of landowners, that if you merely envelop the large acreage subdivisions into this statute, that there's a danger that some of these requirements that make no sense on large subdivisions could be imposed anyway. And so the bargain was, okay, we're going to take those off the table. We're going to lay out what minimal requirements there can be so that you have some assurance that, you know, ridiculous provisions won't creep in. And it was that bargain that has made this subdivision bill possible at all. And this amendment does nothing less than toss away that bargain and create back in that doubt and that uncertainty as to what really is going to be the basis of regulation of these subdivisions once we get through this process. So I would urge you to vote against the amendment and stick with the thoughtful bill that the corporation committee spent a lot of time, effort, and talked with all the concerned parties about. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, and frankly against the bill if we don't put an amendment like this on here. This keeps it simpler. It puts the control of these subdivisions back to where it should be in the county. There's only a few counties in the state that are having big issues with this. The majority of our counties don't have these issues. But the parts about the no water, no sewer, no this, no that, the county can still do that. And frankly, I don't think our job here isn't to protect every single citizen out there from everything that every stupid decision they can make in life. They've got to live their lives. We can't legislate it right here on the floor of the House.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to agree in large degree with a lot of things that are said, but when the county makes decisions to allow these properties to be divided like this without any amenities, then they don't have to pick up the tab. They come to the state. They come to the state to make up for the fact that they don't have water. The state is the one that's putting in these water systems. So the county gets to make the decision, but we get to pay the bill on and against the amendment.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm also against the amendment, and I just think we just heard a misstatement. It makes it a simpler bill, but it doesn't make the law simpler with respect to large lot subdivisions from 35 to 140. It makes it more complicated, more onerous, more and more requirements. And that was what the committee struggled with when we started on this, as the density increases, the size of the plots becomes smaller and the density increases, more and more infrastructure requirements come into being. And you need a lot of infrastructure on small lot, high density subdivisions that's not necessarily required on large lot, low density subdivisions, and we tried to recognize that. This would make it more complicated in terms of application of the requirements to the large lot subdivisions. And it might make a simpler bill, but don't kid yourself. When you go home, your county commissioner is going to say, what did you do to me? And what we're trying to do is only incorporate those parts of the existing regulations on small lots into the large lot that are needed, that make sense. That's what we worked with. And I heard another misstatement made that the county can regulate without this at all and maybe somebody would vote completely against the bill. And that also is wrong. This, for the first time, would give county commissioners the option, not the obligation. We're not imposing anything on them, but for the first time they would have the option to exercise jurisdiction on lots greater than 35 acres in size up to 140. And they can pick off any number in there that they'd like. They can say, we're going to regulate up to 70 acres, 100 acres, 120. There's a couple of aliquot parts in there that they may, and a lot of people have asked me, why is it 140? And that was, incidentally, was something that came up in committee. Not all sections are 640 acres, and not all quarters are 160. And so if we said 160, that didn't seem right. They wanted a low enough number that it would take into account all quarters, including quarters in those short sections. Now, I believe that if we do that, and I really think the bringer of this amendment, even though I'm talking against it as strongly as I can, because it draws into contrast here what we want to do. I believe that if this amendment passes, you're going to go out those two doors and run into a hail of bullets out there. And that is the compromise that we tried to draw as we tried. And there are a lot of landowners who are really fearful of this growing government and expanding jurisdiction over their land. And that's the compromise that we tried to strike. This amendment would go back and impose such onerous requirements on every division of land if the commissioners chose from 140 down. I think outside those two doors they're going to say, we don't want you to give the commissioners the opportunity that they might exercise to include all these requirements, like all the six subparts under the sewage thing, to our land. Just get rid of the bill. The other problem that I have with this amendment is I think it's going to toughen up the requirements to the point that there will be few, if any, county commissioners that will elect to go ahead and exercise jurisdiction, because it is going to pull them into more regulation than they can handle. And they're going to get the same pressure that we're going to get. And even if we pass the bill, I don't think our commissioners, very few of them are going to adopt it. Now, the one set of commissioners that might is from the Bringers County. And they have been very active, and they have done a lot of things. And you can't believe the heat they've taken. He's been part of it in the lawsuits. And so that would be the other detrimental effect, is we might get a bill. I question whether we would, but we might get a bill and then find out that maybe with the exception of that one Board of County Commissioners, no Board of County Commissioners is going to take advantage of the opportunity we're trying to give them to get into some minimal regulation of these large lot subdivisions. So for those reasons, Mr. Speaker, I have to oppose the amendment.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm inclined to be in favor of this amendment, but I guess I need to ask someone who's already spoken that I see nothing in this bill that says that the county commissioners, when they call on page 4 for a study evaluating the sewage system for the proposed subdivision, I see nothing that says they can't go one step further and require the same things in that study that they're requiring in the current subdivision law right now. So I'm just not seeing that they can't take it all the way back to the subdivision law that's currently in statute.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, I think when you look at page 2, lines 6 and 7 of the amendment, read it carefully. Each Board of County Commissioners may by resolution elect to apply this article in its entirety. That means they have to apply the entire article and not a revised model of that that's in the bill as it stands. So I think the bill as it stands is less onerous than the full subdivision requirements, which have, those subdivision requirements have caused us to make all the changes to the subdivision statutes that we have in the last 10 years that I've been here. We made it so onerous to subdivide that there was a huge cry for, you know, allow us to do simple subdivisions, less than five lots, minimize the regulation that we've got, and we did that. And I think this bill does that to a larger degree than the amendment. I'm not sure that the sponsor of the amendment would read that the same way, but I have real concerns about the way the amendment reads. Thank you.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate all the questions and all the opposition. I just felt it was needed that we at least discuss the alternative to doing it this way. Let me address some of the questions that came up. The first question, in particularly dealing with the chairman of revenue, asked about the central water. That's actually in the statute already. And here's how this works. If you look in 18.5.306, those are your minimum requirements for subdivision permits. It's already in the statute. If you're going to get a subdivision, you have to put in whether or not there is or there is not a water system, and also the sewer system, too. And you put it in bold letters just like that. The distinction here is that under present law, and this is always applying to lots under 35, when you're between 1 and 5 lots, that is up to the county commissioners. So the good majority floor leader said you have to apply the whole article. Well, you have to apply the whole article if it's 6 or more lots. If it's 5 or less, it's up to those commissioners. Now, those commissioners could choose to apply the whole article, but some counties have chose not to. They've done with this simple and minor, simple being no regulation and minor being a few. So it would depend again on the county. There was the question about, I'll just put it this way. What my concern is that I think we have a really good subdivision law, and some people in the counties want to regulate larger parcels, larger acreage parcels. This gives them that power under our current law. I find the mode that we're going toward is away from local control, and we're going toward a state-run subdivision. The state will make these decisions, and the state. I'm very concerned that we're heading toward the state taking more and more control, and I just believe the county should be making these decisions. And I know there were some comments that our county commissioners would be upset with us because we gave them responsibility. You know, I think that's where the responsibility lies, not here, to make decisions about subdivisions. So I would urge you to vote aye, and if the amendment fails, I'd urge you to vote no on the entire bill.
The motion is to adopt a second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 11. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 11 has failed. We are now on second reading amendment number 3. Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 11. This appears on page 1, line 4. We neglected when we changed within the body of the bill. We deleted purchase and added or inserted deed. That's the proper terminology. I call for the question.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 11. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 11 has been adopted. We are now on second reading amendment number 4. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 11. I'd like to divide that. At lines 3 and 4 and lines 34 through 37 would be division 2, and the rest of the amendment would be division 1. So division 2 would be lines 3 and 4 and lines 34 through 37. And I'd ask you to vote no on Division 2.
Question.
Because we adopted the second reading amendment number 1, and we already have it.
We'll ask you to stand by for just 1 second. We'll get a ruling on the workings of the division. Could you restate the divisions again, Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
Certainly. Lines 3 and 4. On page 1. And lines 34 through 37 on page 1. Which all those relate to the second reading amendment number 1.
Okay, so that's division number 1.
That would be division number 2.
Number 2. What is division number 1?
The rest of the amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, as I understand it, then division number 2 will be on page 1, lines 3 and 4, and lines 34 through 37. Division 1 is the balance of the amendment. Okay. We are now on Division 1, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Division 1, I'm trying to clean up a few issues that I had with the bill. Page 1, if you look at page 1, lines 15 through 17, a county may by resolution elect to apply the provisions of this article to the sale or disposition of any individual piece of land. I think the words individual piece of are extraneous and don't lend anything to a definition of land. Currently in the statute, subdivision is any division of land, and this talks about sale or disposition of land, and I think that's just it's cleaner. You know, I know that Senate File 11 was largely based upon the subdivision statutes as they exist, 18.5, 301 through 315, and some of that language is fairly odd. I find it fairly odd. So I think that we can just clean that up by taking that out. On page 2, we had the Stubson Amendment yesterday, which was the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, and it talked about the exemption and tightened up that 10-piece exemption. And it referenced original parcel, and it also referenced this section in 3 places, and I felt it needed to also reference, in addition to this section, it needed to reference WS 18.5.3.17, which is the language about contracts for deed, contract for deed. So all that does is add the word original in line 11 of the standing of the Committee of the Whole Amendment, so we know what we're talking about later on in that amendment where it talks about original parcel. It makes it consistent. Page 2, line 17, I was concerned that line 16 of the bill that said that the provisions of 18.5.3.15 shall not be applicable to a subdivision of land under this section. And we had a discussion about the difference between subdivision and zoning. And I think we can clarify it by simply adding at the end of line 17, but nothing in this sentence shall prohibit application of lawfully adopted zoning provisions, and I'd feel a lot better about that. Page 2, line 19, the board may require the following information to be submitted with each application. I want to clarify that to show that the board may require any or all of the following information to be submitted with an application. If the board thinks that there's one application that's pretty simple, they shouldn't have to go through all of the steps that we require them. And I think that's the intent of the original language, but when I read it, I'm not sure. So I'm trying to make that correction there or make that clarification. Page 3. It's interesting that we say here on page 3, line 8, that a survey plat submitted by the subdivider has to be filed. But the survey plat in subparagraph C on page 3, line 17, doesn't require the plat to show the location of lots, units, tracts, or parcels, just streets, alleys, roads, and highways, etc. And I thought to be consistent, we ought to, I don't know why you'd have a plat that wouldn't show lots, but I just wanted to state that. And then page 6, line 13, I make that same change there, where documentation satisfactory to the board that adequate access has been provided and that all proposed lots, units, tracts, and parcels, in addition to what's already there of streets, alleys, and roadways, comply with minimum standards adopted, and I think that that's appropriate. Page 11 reinserts the agricultural exemption that we took out of the Standing Committee amendment yesterday. After further reflection and discussion, I do think it is appropriate to have that there. These are different than subdivision lots of less than 35 acres, and certainly I think that that is appropriate now. And then page 11, line 22, again, the addition of after lot, insert unit, tract, or parcel in two places on that line, because it lot, there are different definitions of parcel or lot. I just want to cover them all. And that's the explanation of the amendment, Mr. Speaker, and answer any questions.
Representative Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think this is a very friendly amendment. We've tracked it in. It looks good. So I would urge your adoption of this division, this division number one on this amendment.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask to divide the amendment, and the division would be page 1, line 39 through 44. Page 2, line 1 through 3 would be division 3. The remainder would be division 1.
Your proposal and Representative Gingrey was page 1, lines 39 through 44, and page 2, lines 1 through 3.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if we could call that division 3.
That is acceptable. Representative Gingrey.
And Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to Division 1 if you want to get work that one first and then come back to Division 3.
Further discussion on Division Number 1. The motion is to adopt second reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 11, Division 1, which is now on the amendment, page 1, lines 5 through 33. And on page 2, lines 4, 5, and 6. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Division number 1 to second reading amendment number 4 to Senate File 11 has been adopted. We are now on Division 3, Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I won't spend much time on this since we discussed it at length yesterday. My concern is that we're creating a two-tiered system. Presently under the law, if you are in a subdivision, in a platted subdivision, and of course your lots would be less than 35, it doesn't matter how much income you're bringing in from ag, you are not eligible for an ag exemption. Under this, those that have potentially a 40-acre parcel will get the ag exemption. So that essentially you could have a one acre difference. I could have a 35 acre parcel in which I'm doing some type of ag on it and I don't get the ag exemption. I could do a 36 acre parcel and there's a 1 acre difference and all of a sudden now I get the ag exemption. I'd rather, and I'm still frustrated that this bill has turned into a Christmas tree. This seems to have nothing to do with the bill, but it's there. That we're going to deal with taxation. I mean, I'd rather go back and have the debate on should people that are in platted subdivisions get the ag exemption or not. And if we're going to do it, then let's do it for all of them and not just for some. I think it should be more dependent on how much income you're bringing in. I mean, if you had some type of orchard, I don't know what that orchard would be, but if you had an orchard, you could bring in, you know, you're bringing in a lot of money. You should maybe get that ag exemption. I think the objective was to stop hobby farmers, you know, people with a 35-acre lot, and then they go cut a little bit of hay and say, hey, I get my ag exemption. But I still think this gets problematic because now you created a two-tiered system, and that's just my concern with this.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, on and against the, well, on and for Division 3 of the amendment. ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to have to start to make some distinction because as we move into this regulation that goes now from zero to 140 acres, we start to incorporate a greater and greater diversity of uses of the land. And I think we're just going to have to recognize that. And we're doing everything now, if we pass this, we're doing everything from chinchilla ranches to quarter section pivot sprinklers. And there's a world of difference. And I think a quarter section pivot sprinkler with one of the arms that bends going around the corner would fit on 140 acres. So that could truly be an agricultural unit. It satisfies all the requirements in Title 39 and 39B10 in terms of income and use. And I just think we're going to have to start recognizing that. We're going to have to say to the county assessor, if this property is being used for ag, in the ag context, then so be it. Tax it that way. And another thing that I could see coming in this with the 10 splits is that some of these divisions could be embedded in a working ranch. And one of the reasons we're given the splits is so estate planning can be done or homes can be built embedded in a ranch that are financed through conventional mortgages. And so if we do that, they may be parcels as this recognizes, but nonetheless, they're incorporated or embedded into a working ranch, and there's good reason not to tax them as subdivided property. So I would urge you to adopt Division of three of this. Understand we are beginning to recognize the distinction, but I just think it's inevitable as the reach of jurisdiction over subdivisions of property grows greater and greater. I just think it's inevitable that we're going to have to begin to recognize some differences in the way they're taxed.
Further discussion as to Division 3. The motion is to adopt Division 3 to Second Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 11. That is page 1 on the amendment, lines 39 through 44, and page 2 on the amendment, lines 1 through 3. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
Division 3 to Second Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 11 has been adopted. We are now on Division 1. 2. That is on page 1, lines 3 and 4, and on page 1, lines 34 through 38. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Please vote no on Division 2.
I forgot. On page 2, it's also lines 4, 5, and 6. Further discussion. Seeing none, you are now... Chairman Illaway.
There's nothing on page 2. It's all on page 1, Mr. Speaker. We did vote on 1, and that did carry on to page 2. We're only talking about those two pieces.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to admit it, but you are correct. You are now voting on Division 2 to Second Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 11. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
Division Number 2 to Second Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 11 has failed. Senate File 11 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time?
Mr. Speaker.
Hearing no objection is...
Before you move on, and having listened to this rousing debate for now 30 or 40 minutes, I need to declare a conflict interest on this bill.
So noted. Senate File 11 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Illaway. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House recess until 2:15.
Committee announcements. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 6, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Friday morning at 8 a.m., not 9 a.m., in Room H10 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet right now in House 18, and we'll discuss Senate File 26 in gross, business entities, registered agents.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 9:15, room H18, to hear Senate File 12, dispensing room products sold.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow upon noon recess in room 302 to discuss Senate File 70, engrossed school finance amendments, Senate File 4054, engrossed school finance rebated recapture, and Senate File 29, engrossed public library endowment challenge program.
Chairman Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet this afternoon upon adjournment in H-17 to discuss Senate File 84, Firemen's Pension Account Amendments, Senate File 83, Retirement Rehired Retirees, and Senate File 88, Engrossed Inmate Medical Parole.
Chairman Philp.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet right now on noon recess in room 204 to discuss the following bills, and these are all re-referred bills. Senate File 19 and clandestine drug laboratories remediation, Senate File 42, Wyoming Court Security Act, Senate File 56, omnibus water bill construction, any other re-referred bills if time permits. And, Mr. Speaker, the conference committee on House Bill 1, the budget bill, will continue on adjournment in room 204.
Further announcements. You have heard the motion. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. The House stands in recess until 2:15 p.m. today.